The following Dharma talk was given by Danika Shoang Ankele Osho at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoang Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, all of you at a distance, too. First, just a moment from this past few days that is a jumping off point. Friday, during our resident body practice, I ended up in the stitchery to do my yoga because the other spaces were being used. And the stitchery has a window that looks right out onto some bushes right by the Sangha house. And I was doing my yoga and I heard a bird. It's just that time of year here now where the birds are starting to come back. And I heard that it was close, so I went and looked out the window, and sure enough, it was right on a bush right outside the window. So I had this like perfect view of this little sparrow who was throwing back its head and pumping its beak, and its whole little feathered body was vibrating as it just pumped out this song. And I was amazed. From the sayings of Xue Feng, the whole universe, the whole world is you. Do you think there is any other? People lose themselves pursuing things. If they could turn around, they would be the same as Buddha. And also, you must perceive your essential nature before you attain enlightenment. What is perceiving your essential nature? It means perceiving your own original nature. What is its form? When you perceive your own original nature, there is no concrete object to see. This is hard to believe, but all Buddhas achieve it. Xue Feng is a 9th century Chinese master. For those whom this was meaningful for, his Japanese name is Seppo, it's Master Seppo. And he was the teacher of Yunmen and the disciple of Dishan. The whole universe, the whole world is you. And when you perceive your own original nature, there is no concrete object to see. So what is seen? What do we awaken to? If we're looking for a thing, any kind of thing, even a non-material thing, we will not find it. So then, how do we proceed? Buddhism talks of emptiness, and another way of saying this is interdependence. Hojin Sensei said, "The Avatamsaka Sutra uses the metaphor of Indra's net to describe the interdependence of all living things. Imagine an infinite web of jewels hanging in each nodule of the net, where each jewel reflects all the other jewels. When a jewel in this intricate net is touched, all the others are affected. This image vividly reflects the hidden interconnectedness, interrelatedness, and interdependency of everything and everyone in the whole universe. Nothingness doesn't have much to do with nothing," she says. "Things are interrelatedness itself. Shugen Roshi said, "The teaching of selflessness is not a rejection or a negation of the self. It's just releasing. We don't need to hold on." So the theme of the Ango, right relationship with the world, : expressing gratitude. It's like a pith teaching packed into one, just in case you missed it. Like, okay, right relationship with the world. I'm ready for the teachings. It's right there. It's right there. So this bird that I saw, not but a couple of days later, I discovered this same bird in this poem by Ross Gay, the poet Ross Gay. Some of you may be familiar with this poem. The poem is called The Catalog of Unabashed Gratitude, and it's from a collection by the same name. And this poem has been like running through me since I encountered it. The poem itself is not especially new. I guess it was 2015 that it came out, but I just discovered it. Taikyo gave me the book for Christmas, and I picked it up. So I wanted to, it's a long poem. It's a poem in the tradition of like, just like an outpouring. And I wanted to share just some pieces of it as we go through these Dharma teachings. So this is how it opens. And I guess I just want to say I feel ambivalent about just sharing pieces of the poem. The poem is really a complete work and deserves to be taken in its completeness and its complexity. And I highly recommend, if you are not familiar with it, you become familiar with it. And I even more highly recommend that you take 15 minutes out of your life and find, there's readily available a video of Ross Gay reading his own poem. And then keep that in your back pocket for days where you're feeling down or depressed. Okay. All right, here we go. Friends, will you bear with me today? For I have awakened from a dream in which a robin made with its shabby wings a kind of veil behind which it shimmied and stomped something from the south of Spain, its breast a flare, looking me dead in the eye from the branch that grew in my window. Coochie cooing my chin, the bird shuffling its little talons left, then right, while the leaves bristled against the plaster wall, two of them drifting onto my blanket, while the bird opened and closed its wings like a matador giving up on murder, jutting its beak, turning a circle, and flashing again the ruddy bombast of its breast, by which I knew upon waking, it was telling me, in no uncertain terms, to bellow forth the tubas and sousaphones, the whole rusty brass band of gratitude not quite dormant in my belly. It said so in a human voice. Bellow forth. And who among us could ignore such odd and precise counsel? I'm going to pause. So, speaking of bellowing forth, Mahapajapati, homage to you, Buddha, best of all creatures, who set me and many others free from pain. All pain is understood. The cause, the craving, is dried up. The noble eightfold way unfolds. I have reached the state where everything stops. I have been mother, father, son, brother, grandmother. Knowing nothing of the truth, I journeyed on, but I have seen the Blessed One. This is my last body. I will not be reborn again. Look at the disciples all together, their energy, their sincere effort. This is homage to the Buddhas. Maya gave birth to Gotama for the sake of us all. She has driven back the pain of the sick and the dying. This is from the Theragatha, Songs of the Nuns. And it's a poem that begins and ends in gratitude. In the Sanskrit, that homage is namo. And the Japanese sort of version of that is namu, which we chant in Fusatsu and other times. And that has always been explained, that I've heard it, as being one with. And, you know, namo translated as homage, veneration, devotion, bowing, actually, giving praise, giving thanks. And just to reflect on how much of our practice is expressing that namo. Why? Why so many bows? Why so much incense offering? Why so much dedicating the merit? And what about all these services anyway? We're here for a transformation of mind and gratitude. Is a transformation of mind, isn't it? Totally. Totally. Always available to us, always. We are continually receiving. I mean, at the very, very basic crux of it, we are continually receiving this moment of our life. So, right relationship, expressing gratitude. What would it be like to walk around feeling grateful all the time? What a practice that would be. Gratitude can awaken our heart to what we're in the midst of all the time. Hojin Sensei speaks about feeling the living energy of relating. You're always in relationship. Can you feel the living energy of that? We don't always feel it. I mean, in fact, often we're oblivious. We're so wrapped up in ourselves. I love that in Mahapajapati's poem, "Homage to you, Buddha, best of all creatures." Something about that gets me. That next verse, "All pain is understood, the cause, the craving is dried up." That word craving, tanha, thirst, desire, when Buddha had insight into suffering and the cause of suffering, this is what he saw. And because we have him and all of the ancestors who have passed this Dharma down pointing the way, it makes it actually quite easy for us to see Having been introduced to that, even conceptually, we can look and see like, oh, shit, that is true. Any moment where I'm like in pain or suffering, can I see like, okay, as radical as it is to frame it this way, like I'm suffering right now because I don't want this. And we can think like, well, of course I don't want it. It's this, it's this, it's this. But no, imagine if you were okay with it. Whatever the thing is. Imagine. That line, the craving is dried up. You know, I was thinking like the phrase dried up doesn't evoke like delight in me. I'm like, oh, I don't want any, I don't, you know, like drying up, like, but you know, it's like if the thing is bitter, right? If the flow is like bitter, then it's drying up actually reveals the cool, clear. So we look and we see the subtlety of this craving. Sometimes just a razor thin blade, hard to even see, that's separating us from what is self and other. That razor thin blade of not quite right, not enough. But it is enough. And you are enough exactly how you are. Yeah. Come back to me, Ross. Help me out. Ah. I'm going to just pick right up again at the start of the poem. So one of the things to know about Ross Gay is that he has been a big part of this community orchard in Indiana where he teaches. And so I was thinking of Yukon too as I was reading this. There's lots of language about growing things and cow shit. All right, so it is enough. Hear ye, I am here to holler that I have hauled tons, by which I don't mean lots, I mean tons of cow shit. And stood ankle deep in swales of maggots, swirling the spent beer grains the brewery man was good enough to dump off, holding his nose, for they smelled very bad, but make the compost writhe giddy and lick its lips, twirling dung with my pitchfork again and again with hundreds and hundreds of other people. We dreamt an orchard this way, furrowing our brows and hauling our wheelbarrows and sweating through our shirts. And less than a year later, there was a party at which trees were sunk into the well-fed earth, one of which, a Liberty apple, after having been watered in, was tamped by a barefoot baby with a bow hanging in her hair, biting her lip at her joyous works. And friends, this is the realest place I know. It makes me squirm like a worm. I am so grateful. You could ride your bus there or roller skate or catch the bus. There is a fence and a gate twisted by hand. There is a fig tree taller than you in Indiana. It will make you gasp. It might make you want to stay alive even. Thank you. And thank you for not taking my pal when the engine of his mind dragged him to a swig, a fistful of Xanax, and a bottle or two of booze. And thank you for taking my father a few years after his own father went down. Thank you, mercy, mercy. Thank you for not smoking meth with your mother. Oh, thank you. Thank you for leaving and for coming back. And thank you for what inside my friend's love bursts like a throng of roadside goldenrod gleaming into the world, likely hauling a shovel with her like one named Aralee Ott, with hands as big as horses, and who, like one named Aralee Ott, will laugh time to time till the juice runs from her nose. Oh, thank you for the way a small thing's wail makes the milk, or was one, what was once milk in us, gather into horses huckle buckling across a field. So much. So much. The other side of receiving is giving. She, no. Shishobo, Bodhisatta, Shishobo, the Bodhisattva's methods for guiding beings. Giving is the first one. It's all coming together, people. Kaz Ta-Nehisi translates that opening line of this is Dogen's fascicle we're studying for the Ango. Giving means non-greed. In the Carl Bielefeld translation, which is part of a new collection that's been released by the Soto School, he translates that same line as giving means not craving. So because of that echo of the craving, I'm going to go with the Bielefeld translation. In offering a teaching, so this is Dogen, in offering a teaching of the true way, one is necessarily simply not craving. It is like offering discarded jewels to a stranger. In offering the flowers from a distant mountain to the Tathagata, or offering treasures from a previous life to living beings, whether it is the Dharma or an object, each is originally endowed with the merit accompanying giving. There is a principle that, even if they are not one's own objects, this does not obstruct giving. Without despising the fact that the object is trivial, we should recognize that its merit is real. A little further on, the causal efficacy of this giving penetrates even to the distant heavens and human realms, penetrates even to the worthies and sages who have verified the fruit. The reason for this is that the giving, becoming experience, has formed a bond with them. The vastness or narrowness of mind cannot be measured. And the greatness or smallness of material things cannot be weighed. But there are times when our mind turns things, and there is offering in which things turn the mind. Giving is a practice that also transforms the mind. Dada Roshi used to say, Dana Paramita, the perfection of giving. In Dana Paramita, giver and receiver are one reality. Dogen Zenji speaks about how this giving plants wholesome karma, and its merit is beyond. The merit of giving reaches everywhere. Offering flowers on a distant mountain. How do you do that? Later, he says, offering even a single particle of dust. Offering treasures you had in a former life. You have so much to give. You have so much to give. Yesterday with the residents, we practiced giving our attention, just listening, and giving our heart, speaking from our own true experience. So much giving, and it felt incredible. Alive, connected. In this passage, Dogen speaks about the merit that accompanies giving. Merit cannot be measured. Its merit is real. Merit, I think of merit as like a way of sort of conceptually trying to make sense of like how positive karma actually does have an effect on our mind and our heart. It's like a way of saying like, no, really, it matters. Like you won't be able to measure it, but you will see there is cause and effect. And the teachings say that accumulating merit, our life transforms. It's just a way of saying cause and effect are real, and that the energy of giving is real, just to bring forward the mind of giving, just to imagine giving flowers to the Buddha. And scientifically, they've shown in studies that if you bring to mind gratitude, so I imagine if there is a study, giving would show something similar, it activates the same regions of the mind that sort of are responsible for feelings of bliss. But you know who I think of with all this giving. Yuki, the master giver. Totally. Not giving things, giving a look or a laugh or a hug. Those words just when you needed some encouragement to pick up. And you know, that giving is totally flowing on. So, so true. It has not stopped. This person has changed their form. But that karma is moving. Right? In Mahapajapati's poem, she says, knowing nothing of the truth, I journeyed on, but I have seen the Blessed One. I have seen the Buddha. I don't think she's talking about her son. I have seen the Blessed One. What did she see? The whole universe, the whole world is you. Do you think there is any other? The teaching of selflessness is not a rejection or negation of the self. It's just releasing. We don't need to hold on. That craving, that clinging, from that clinging, releasing, from releasing, receiving, from receiving, giving. We can sit in Zazen with a mind of gratitude, just for what is, not going anywhere, not trying to make anything better or different. And we can experience giving and receiving in any moment, picking a flower petal up off the floor, flushing a toilet. And when it's hard, or it's scary, or it's stomach turning, sometimes it's possible to take that very thing and turn it. And sometimes that's really, really hard. But you can always look and see what else is true right now, even at such a moment. I think of Yukon lying in his deathbed, unable to feed himself, unable really to move the withered limbs of his body. And to each person coming in to lend a hand or do a task, thank you. I love you. I love you. I love you. Totally. What makes a giver is being connected to that sense of abundance. Knowing you have enough to give, and knowing that the giving itself refills, refills the reservoir. And those thoughts of a self that's separate and that needs and that wants and all of that can hum all the time like that bitter river underneath the surface of everything. And it's not about yanking the plug and shutting it down. It's gentle. Redirect. Roshi, in the teachings about the mental factors, was talking about how they color the mind. Letting the color of the mind be one of gratitude. It's a softening, that living inner energy of relating. There's only relationship. I love that line in Mahapajapati's poem. Look at the disciples all together, their energy, their sincere effort. This is homage to the Buddhas. I so feel that. I so feel that. Just the sincerity of practice, how nourishing that is to feel that in Sangha. And so in the burning world, to take in what else there is. I would like to end with some more from Ross Gay. It's hard to choose. And thank you to the man all night long hosing a mist on his early bloomed peach tree so that the hard frost not waste the crop, the ice in his beard, and the ghosts lifting from him when the warming sun told him, sleep now. Thank you, the ancestor, who loved you before she knew you, by smuggling seeds into her braid for the long journey, who loved you before he knew you, by putting a walnut tree in the ground, who loved you before she knew you, by not slaughtering the land. Thank you, who did not bulldoze the ancient grove of dates and olives, who sailed his keys into the ocean and walked softly home, who did not fire, who did not plunge the head into the toilet, who said, stop, don't do that, who lifted some broken someone up, who volunteered the way a plant birthed of the reseeding plant is called a volunteer, like the plum tree that marched beside the raised bed in my garden, like the arugula that marched itself between the blueberries, nary a bayonet, nary an army, nary a nation, which usage of the word volunteer, familiar to gardeners the wide world, made my pal shout, oh, and dance and plunge his knuckles into the lush soil before gobbling two strawberries and digging a song from his guitar made of wood from a tree someone planted. Thank you. And thank you, too, this knuckle-headed heart, this pelican heart, this gap-toothed heart flinging open its gaudy maw to the sky. Oh, clumsy, oh, bumble-fucked, oh, giddy, oh, dumbstruck, oh, rickshaw, oh, goat twisting its head at me from my peach tree's highest branch, balanced impossibly, gobbling the last fruit, its tongue working like an engine, a lone, sweet drop tumbling by some miracle into my mouth like the smell of someone I've loved. Heart like an elephant screaming at the bones of its dead. Heart like the lady on the bus dressed head to toe in gold. The sun shivering her shiny boots, singing Erykah Badu to herself, leaning her head against the window. And thank you, the way my father one time came back in a dream, by plucking the two cables beneath my chin like a bass fiddle's strings and played me until I woke singing, no kidding, singing and smiling, thank you, stumbling into the garden where the Juneberry's flowers had burst open like the bells of French horns, the lily my mother and I planted oozed into the air. The bazillion ants labored in their earthen workshops below. The collared greens waved in the wind like the sails of ships, and the wasps swam in the mint bloom's viscous swill. And you, again you, for hanging tight, dear reader. I know I can be long-winded sometimes. I want so badly to rub the sponge of gratitude over every last thing, including you, which, yes, awkward. The suds in your ear and armpit, the little sparkling gems slipping into your eye. Soon it will be over. Which is precisely what the child in my dream said, holding my hand, pointing at the roiling sea and the sky hurtling our way like so many buffalo, who said, it's much worse than we think, and sooner. To whom I said, no duh, child in my dreams. What do you think this singing and shuddering is? What this screaming and reaching and dancing and crying is, other than loving what every second goes away? Goodbye, I mean to say, and thank you every day. Thank you, silhouette of my mountain home, blossoming from the darkness against the burgeoning blue of the just beginning dawn. Thank you, cold dregs of coffee in my mug, and the soft, soaked crumbs of biscotti on the bottom. And thank you for rising early and sounding the drum and ringing the bell. Thank you for bringing yourselves down the hill in the dark and the cold to stir and to roast and to bake, that we might gather some morsels and meet at a table and be nourished in so many ways. And homage to Buddha, best of all creatures, and praise be to Mahapajapati and to Manjushri and Maitreya and my mother, and to Hakuryu O Daizenjin and Pang Ling Zhao and Dongshan and Wei Neng and Bai Zhang and Liu Tiemo and Mizuno Joran and all the Buddha ancestors. And thank you for showing up. Thank you for practicing the way, for living through your pain and keeping going, for seeking and for finding and for loving. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as cushions, incense, liturgical instruments, Dharma books, and more, visit monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.